Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. It's the end of the week and just wrapping some things up over here, and I'm looking forward to the weekend. It's a good day.
Nice.
Yeah. How are things with you?
Pretty good. I had a little, business trip, went to a conference. Yeah, it was pretty fun. Got to see my worlds collide. I don't know. I made a little mini like LinkedIn post about it, but it was all these little, you know, you have all these little pockets of different people, like so people I know in my neighborhood, people like that I game with, people that do marketing. And I think you and me being like ultimate generalists, we have a lot of different probably pockets of friends, and like most. So mine like collided a bunch of things, founder friends, internet friends that do marketing, just all kinds of stuff. It was, and then one of my teammates went out with us, in addition to, we have a developer in Seattle. So we met him in person for dinner and stuff. So it's just like,
whoa,
I don't know, melting pot and conglomeration, fun stuff though.
It's like that's an effective trip.
Yeah, it was. It was good on a lot of different levels. So I had a great time.
Oh, that's sweet. Good stuff.
Cool. So I think you had a topic to talk about today, right?
So I've been working on testing Taxi for a while, and I launched a beta probably like 2 weeks ago or so, and kind of started marketing a bit, and got a lot of response from it. It's been pretty cool. A bunch of people have signed up. A bunch of people have been asking questions. A bunch of people have been just interacting kind of surface level. And so that's pretty cool. And I've had like most of my interactions with people, they're just like, you know, I try it out, or like, what's the pricing? And like, you know, can I just play around with it and that sort of thing? And, you know, when will it be fully ready for stable version? But I also had some different people reach out that were like very different from those. There are people that were really looking for, you know, how do I partner with you? How can I get a deal? How can I, you know, all sorts of little edge cases and things that they're like, you know, big like, company
kind of
stuff.
This is not my standard funnel. This is not like who I was trying to attract, but hey, I'll talk to people if they're asking to be talked to.
Exactly. And so I kind of, you know, I gauge and, you know, just kind of push things back and forth. And I guess my topic, or things that I want to ask you about today are how do you deal with these questions that seem like big company questions? And it's like, you know, I'm not really ready for that. But at the same time, like if there are prospects that are asking for this, you know, maybe it's worth just kind of seeing what's down the tunnel a little bit before saying yes or no to something. Like maybe there's some value in, you know, maybe there's something there, but like, you know, how far do I go down those tunnels? Right. And so I guess like, do you have like a high level thought on like how to deal with that as like a young company?
Yeah, I do. And it's sort of, it might come out. This might come out in not the best organized order, because we've done a lot of this over the years. So I've realized this is not an uncommon thing. Also, if you haven't seen the show before, it feels like a big opportunity. Like, ooh, this guy says he could sell like 100 licenses, or they're an agency and they have this massive network, right? But you don't really know that. That's the challenge. And the reality is a lot of people are just either one, like, you know, I put them into a couple different camps. One, they're either just like looking for a deal, like from a volume perspective, and trying to get a deal with kind of dangling to you that, hey, I could sell 50 of these, right? But I need one like for free, or I need one at like half the cost, right? So there's like the deal hunter person. And then there's the other person that is sort of almost like, ooh, this is cool. If I wrap myself around this, I could turn this into a business, like this almost business opportunity person, right? Like, hey, ooh, I could be a reseller. Like, this is awesome. And now I have my product and now I can go to market, right? Like, they might not have those things. So those are like two camps I'd start to categorize them in. And then the third camp, I'd put it into actually legitimate. It's like a little more legitimate, like, hey, I actually do have an audience. So sort of, the promise that they're kind of trying to make you is actually more likely to be possible, if that makes sense. So it's somewhat of like the real deal versus like the other two kind of coming at it from an opportunistic angle, if that makes sense.
Right. So kind of like the first one is like pretending maybe to have bigger volume than they might, and just looking for to get a deal on their first license, or on, you know, like they can get them for cheap or something. And the second one being kind of like, I could be the salesperson for this. I'll just white label it and, you know, it'll be my thing.
Right.
I'm glad
you brought up the term white label, because here what you'll hear is like reseller, white label. Basically, white label means I want my brand in front, not yours. And I just want to be like, and another one is like just partner.
Right.
So there can be success across any of those three categories, but I would say the white label is the biggest like danger sign.
Right. Right. And what about white labeling is like concerning to you?
So
like there are companies that do that quite successfully.
Kind of. Yeah. Yes. So it is possible, but the challenge is it's a tax you have to keep paying. So like if you decide to white label your stuff, it means everything you're doing, whether it's like support docs or whatever else, if you want to sort of keeping it aligned with one audience, which is you as the brand of Testing Taxi, it means you have to always be thinking about hiding Testing Taxi, right? You always have to be either, I mean, I think there's opportunities for someone that if you 100% like you hate sales and marketing, and all you really want to do is behind the scenes and like Testing Taxi is always going to be invisible. Like that's one tactic, but totally different story, totally different. Like you need to have probably a more trusted network. There's like all kinds of other reasons why that I think is a bad idea for an indie founder. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
And some of the challenges get into like, I know at least from a SaaS perspective, if you're going to ever do an app integration, let's say like a Shopify or a HubSpot app store, like they can't use that functionality, or you have to now create a forked, like unlicensed version, unofficial app version, so they can do it in the background, right? Like you're starting to see where your brand and your name gets tied to everything you do. And also means you can't talk about it. You can't talk about it to marketing things. Like you're almost hamstringing yourself, and it's a whole different business motion. You need another business motion, like a kind of hole in the head as you're trying to get one going.
Right. So what about like co-branding? So like one kind of avenue I've thought of this is like, maybe you have somebody that's a consultant and they've got their company, and their company provides testing for, you know, this big company. Right. And so then they get to put their name and logo in a prominent place, but the system is still Testing Taxi. It's still the Testing Taxi domain and all of that. And if you look, like you'll see it everywhere that it's Testing Taxi. It's just that, hey, this is provided by this company or whatever. What do you think about that?
Well, one, that also sounds like a level of effort, and I don't know how you have to be involved. So I think the only one that where it's sort of, for me, one strategy that has more or less worked is also this idea of like a no label. So we've done that, and that's been, I would say we have a few customers using that. But again, like if I could roll it back, it was probably a tax and distraction over the years that has not been worth it. Like they might have added 5 or 6 clients to it, but the reality is it's an add-on for their existing services. It's we still have to pay the tax of like not necessarily putting their branding up front, but hiding ours, like even in the app, like I don't want your help docs. Like it's like, okay, now I have to turn that off. It just becomes, and any one of these seems like a small thing, right? So I would say from a co-branding, it almost doesn't make sense. You could just be like, you're a reseller, you're an official reseller, I have a reseller page, but that's fine. And this kind of gets back to like the mechanic that honestly works the best is not giving a discount, but giving it on a volume basis past a certain number. So, or you might be say like, buy 3 licenses and I'll give you 50% off, but like get all up front, right? Like if you really put your money where your mouth is, if you really want it, you really know you're going to do 5, like, cool. The first one is still always full price. Like give a discount on it, on the promise of later. Just say, I will give you the promise of later. You bring 3, I'll give you, you know, the the second and third one, I'll give you those for 50% off. You can make a margin. I don't care. As long as you pay, I'm not going to go collect from those people. Like,
yeah,
I am truly proxying through you. You're the thing. I'm not hidden. I'm not going to hide myself. Mm-hmm. Like, and they essentially have to run the risk of like going direct or not, like the person kind of mm-hmm. running around them to go direct to you. Cause the reality mm-hmm. is they should be a value add part of this equation. And usually it's more someone that's like, hey, I'll help set up the test. I'll do it. And the customer, a real customer, may not care, and they might just wrap it into all of their own billing, and that's fine.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That is interesting. Eh? Like the being still showing yourself as like testing taxi, but you know, maybe you have like a reseller. And I really like that thing of, you know, bring the value and then I'll give you the discount, right? Like, because I think there's so many people, especially when I've heard of like partnership type things where it's like, there's all these promises and it's like, who actually delivers? And yeah, you never really know, right?
Very few and far between.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. And so I guess that also like opens up another avenue, maybe like you were talking about the reseller kind of situation, so they sit between you and them kind of on the pricing or on the payments part of things. How about like affiliate sort of deals? How do you generally think about structuring affiliate deals?
Just like people that are going to bring you direct like, customers, so to speak.
Like I'll bring you a bunch of customers. What are you going to give me kind of thing?
I mean, those ones, that's a more, you know, classical setup.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it also depends on the relationship, right? So if it truly is like, hey, I'm an agency and I work with all these people and I basically kind of want to cut if I'm bringing them to you, right? Mm-hmm. And this is more typical to the, this is one mode. It's more of like, you have to think about it more of how, I think HubSpot and some of these other ones structure it this way, right? And it's sort of the kickback they get is really more from, there's this is probably more from that volume discount. So like have them collect the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, basically they can charge them the full amount like mm-hmm. on their side, but they're getting a discount, right? So like maybe it's $200 a month, but they're charging them $200 a month, but they're only paying you $100 a month. So for that. So it comes to them in form of a discount. Now, if it is a pure, like, hey, I'm a website and I'm going to send you traffic or something in a newsletter. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's more the classic affiliate like mm-hmm. model and where it's not as much like a one-on-one like partnership. It's more of like, I'm going to loan you some access to my distribution channel. Now, if you do have people coming to you with that, then you can also just position it as like a, hey, yeah, if you bring people and, you know, I'll essentially give you like a finder's fee type of thing. And the challenge with that is oftentimes it may not be enough or they're looking for something in perpetuity, which mm-hmm. I'm definitely more against, especially with a SaaS business.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's other ways you can structure them and you could just say, hey, yeah, it's like, hey, if you bring someone and they sign an annual, like I can give you more money up front. But honestly, it's probably one of those things that are, you have to either make a very simplistic model to which you're just, it's easy to manage and it makes sense for you. So at this early stage, like it's fairly potentially high return, but you have to make it very like low pain in the butt. So you give a blanket thing. You can be like, hey, sure. Like we'll do that. I'll track them if they come in and, I don't remember how much your service or what you're planning on is, but you could be like, okay, I'll give you $100 per account, but only after they stay for 3 months. So you have to kind of keep it at a caveat. So you're not getting stuck in the middle with potentially fraudulent or just crappy like referrals and stuff like that. Right. So something like that probably is going to help you quickly find the real one and then mm-hmm. sort of figure out if it's better to have a better structure in mind, but make it sure that it's like a no lose proposition for you.
Mm-hmm.
And also there is a little bit of like delay. So, but if they push back, well, I need like 50% on this, just like, no, it's just not worth it right now. I'm not in a position to think that through and actually try to like, you know, jump through those hoops, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think what I found helpful, like with these discussions too, is just to give a general direction to the topic. So like, for instance, affiliate, just be like, hey, for an affiliate type of a deal, like I'd be willing to give you some sort of finder's fee. It'd be a one-time payment and, you know, that's kind of it. Right. And then that way they like, especially for people that are kind of kicking around the tires, you can kind of say like, you know, you can let them respond as to whether they're interested in pursuing that further or having that conversation. Because I think what's tricky with affiliates, it's like they're effectively being marketing for you or distribution, and you don't know how good the prospects are at the end of that tunnel, or if they're going to just send you, you know, a load of people that are going to sign up for 1 month because they're promised something that's, you know, not true. And then, you know, 2 months later they cancel or something. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it depends on what their channel opportunity is. And I think, I think for you to quickly suss out if it's a real deal or not, the good ones honestly care a lot about their audience, right? Like if someone has a good newsletter, they're not just looking to profit off of it. Cause if they're just looking at like, how much can I make off of it versus if the question is more of like, hey, I'd love to refer you. Like also I want to do this I think this is going to be great for my audience. Mm-hmm. Like a person that is taking it from that angle. And they're also like, can you also give me a deal to give to them? Because I want to look good in front of my audience. I want to give them like a $50 credit or a, you know, a 10% off. But, you know, I'd also like, you know, if some of them sign up, can we talk about like a potential kickback for some of that? Right. So that's a more like, okay, this is a more balanced relationship. Mm-hmm. Like they're not just looking to like plug this and put some ads on it and basically see if they can milk the money machine from your side. Right. Yeah. So you have to like suss those out. And I think a good way is asking about, well, what's your plan to distribute these? And the right people will be like, oh, well, hey, I've got this newsletter. You should check it out. Like, I think this audience would be perfect. They're really looking for, like you were talking about, like a co-branding. It's like a partnership. And that goes three ways with you, their audience, and themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Huh. So like, as I'm going through these things in my list here, I'm like, these are all really complicated and I should just punt most of these unless like
most of them
someone like, really comes along with something that's like, okay, you seem like the real deal and this seems like a really good opportunity. Like for instance, like with the affiliate, it's like if they're concerned about the quality of my product and you know what they're, you know, telling me about their customers and would this be a good fit for this type of person, like it's more something more to consider. Whereas like just someone that's just broadly like, what's your affiliate deal? It's like, well, okay.
Right. If that's the first kind of question, then it's sort of already starting in a like, this may not be the right fit or more of a distraction. I mean, a good way for you is just as you pattern match these, because you're going to read them, is just like come up with a response, a standard kind of response for any of these. Oh, great. Tell me more about your audience and how you plan to distribute. Like a lot of times I'll give a good example. Get some like requests for interviews and stuff. It's like, you know, I know it's the same people scraping things like, you were on the Indie Hackers podcast and I want to essentially find out if like you'll be online or I want to start a podcast or something, but they all come in different outbound formats. But most of the time, my first reply is if it seems reasonably legit and I'm like, you know, they want to interview me or something, or maybe it's like I want to pick your brain for something, or I want feedback on my product to really sell you. Like, it's like, you got to, but the first question I usually ask back is like, well, what's the podcast?
Sure. Yeah.
Or sometimes it's like, hey, we want to interview and write you up in this publication. Like, well, what's the publication? Yeah, right? And I'll just be honest. I was like, I want to see if it's the right vibe for me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And 90% of them like, oh, it hasn't launched yet. Or it's this obscure, and I look it up and it's like, there's like no traffic. There's like, no, it's like, I think this is just a hook to get me on a call.
Yeah. And they're going to sell you on something.
So that's my standard question is usually like answering their question with a question. It's just like, well, do we do this? And be like, well, I'll spend 2 minutes to actually like vet it, but give me something to vet. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the good ones, the pitches are like, hey, I've done this. I've interviewed these other people. Like, I think you'd be a good fit because of this. Like, it's more personalized. Yeah. It actually saves me. And it's like, will I click that schedule button? highly more likely if it checks out, or even if it's like, hey, I have 10 episodes up and I go and listen and I'm like, just listen for 2 minutes to get the vibe. And it's like, okay, sure. That's probably, you know, a little more worth the time.
I have a
same thing.
I have a friend who works in manufacturing, and he gets a lot of pitches from different manufacturers. And he says he can judge the quality of the pitch by how terse the email is. He's like, if it's like a one, you know, a two sentence or three sentence email and it has no like greeting or anything, he's like, those are perfect. That's how you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. And I guess maybe the last one here on like, you know, different things that people ask for during their, you know, onboarding and beta phase is questions like customization kind of questions. Like, you know, I have this custom security need, or I have this custom networking need, you know, tell me, you know, what can you do for me kind of thing? How do you think about those? Or how do you kind of, you know, initially respond to those in a way that you can kind of suss out if this is, you know, worth discussing or not?
Are these like they've kicked the tires on the product and there's basically they found like a gap, a feature gap that they need, or what do you?
No, like, more like they're just looking at the outside. They just look at the feature set. They haven't even really dug into it at all.
Okay. So yeah, so I guess I'm not sure your so question. So there, yeah.
The question is, I guess, like there have been people that have asked me for different security requirements or different networking requirements that are kind of above and beyond what your standard testing company seems to need. And, you know, like HIPAA compliance or like some of those like extra things, right? Or I want access to my on-prem network, you know, through some custom gateway or something like that. And, right, you know, can you customize for me, basically, is the question. And it's, you know, kind of outside of the general scope of the customer I'm targeting. And so my initial thought is like, well, you know, you haven't actually tried out the product, so that's already a red flag. But, you know, even if they did, you know, at this early stage, I think my initial reaction is, well, like, if there's a really big dollar sign attached to this, maybe, but also this is going to distract me from the target market that I've got and the other leads that I have in my pipeline and, you know, fixing bugs and all of those things. And so my initial thought is kind of like, well, like, let's push back on some of these things and kind of see if, do we actually need those? Or are you just saying that because, you know, you read it in a blog article somewhere and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gets back to like asking them more questions. Like, what? And I think your impulse is good. And I think, again, it depends on sort of where else you want to focus your time. So it sounds like you're getting plenty down the core like use case. Mm-hmm. And I would keep focusing on that. And these other ones, it's hard to tell, like, over time, could this become a bigger, more important thing? And maybe it's something you're doing later. But so it's two things. One, you know, pushing back and be like, oh, well, you know, have you tried the product yet or something? Pushing them to sort of like investigate more to see, you know, it's a lot of this is like, can you get more information, right? And can you help them get more information? But if it truly is a blocker for them, that is like, I can't use the product. I can't even monkey with the product in the way I want to because of this requirement, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you could just nicely say, well, you know, we're not focusing on that point, but I'd love to, you know, if I can reach out to you further when this does become a thing. And you're sort of get cataloging these, right? So maybe when you do get five or six, then it's like, okay, now let me set up a standard set of questions or go back and interview these five or six. And maybe in 3 months, it is worth saying, actually, I have 20 people over there. Maybe this is a bigger opportunity. So it's like, you kind of want to leave it open. You've cast a big net and you want to just like, okay, over time is all of a sudden this side net that I started to hide them in, like has, there might be an opportunity there. This other opportunity I have is still working, but there could be a bigger jump here and I might be able to get a, you know, hey, you 10, if I build this obscure networking connection thing, like, yeah, would you guys, you know, pay for 6 months up front or at least for a license? And it's like, you can kind of suss that out as an opportunity and basically have it move up your roadmap from a priority standpoint, because it gives you a trade-off of something else. Like, hey, this just made me 10 grand in cash.
Yeah.
I was going to build it is something that's probably like 6 months, 10 months, 12 months away. But
yeah,
for that, I will do that. And I've seen enough opportunities. So I do think there's a future thing of these kind of coming in. And can you pay me to build it?
Yeah, that's, yeah, I think that's a great way of thinking about it. And I think that the something I've really noticed this time around with this testing taxi versus previous products that I've launched is there is so much information coming my way right now that I feel like I have to, I actually get to do that where I'm like, okay, I'm going to prioritize what seems the most, the best return. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to prioritize that. And then, you know, it just makes it easier. Whereas like, if you're not doing much and then you get someone asking all these crazy questions, like, well, I do have time, like, should I do it? Or like, right. And it could be something that's way too early. And maybe I need to be just, you know, doing marketing or something else. Right.
Right. Now that sounds great. I mean, I know you've always struggled and almost to your annoyance, you're like, the person signed up and they don't respond to any email. They like, yeah, I prompt them with a question. Like, I'm just trying to like help or understand why they're, and they're giving me zip, not a yeah, zero. Like it's radio silence. And this is that flip side. And it's like, okay, maybe there's a there, or maybe I'm actually, you know, speaking enough to a pain point that is worth people's mental energy to try to solve rather than just, I'm just kicking the tires for the sake of it.
Yeah. And that it really feels that way, that it's like a problem to solve, where people that on my previous version of testing taxi were kind of like, oh, that's cute, I'll look at it for 5 minutes. They're more willing to invest time into this, and they're more willing to engage on it. You know, I've even had people specifically say something along those lines of like, I saw your last one, I didn't really have time for it, but like, This one, I have time for this.
This is interesting.
And you're like, ah, okay.
No, that's yeah, cool. Makes me feel a lot better about a conversation I had yesterday with my my director of a product. So as you know, you've sent it to my QA person, yeah, some information, and what's funny is, you know, I've asked to be dropped off the emails because yeah, it's like, you guys are talking, hey, does it do this? Or how can I fix this? Or just, you know, I know I was always happy to have it help give you some feedback. But then it came back around on a one-on-one call with the, you know, my QA person reports to this director, and I had a one-on-one with him, and he's sort of like, oh, this came out of nowhere. It's like, are we helping your friend and all this stuff? I'm like, well, let's level set, just making sure, like, I did not say we have to do anything extraordinary. It's just, if it's helpful to us, use it and give some feedback. If it's not, like, don't invest mm-hmm, dev time in making it work. Cause he's like, oh, I could do this. And then they said it needs to do this. I'm like, well, we use Ghost Inspector. It's kind of like that. Yeah. Like, well, yeah, I guess, you know, if we push back and just say, can they use the same, you know, user agent as that, and then it'll pass through our stuff. We're like, okay, but don't code anything to have it like skip over Capacha or other stuff to get over. I was basically like, if it's of value, use it and give feedback, and we might check in later, you know, but don't mm-hmm, waste our own internal time on that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway, so it makes me feel better that it's not like, you know, we were one of your only people, like, you know, giving you feedback or helping you along either. So
yes, yeah, that's good. Good. Well, we're at 30 minutes. Do you want to call it, or do you want to talk about more?
I don't know. It's probably a good wrapped topic, I think, for what we have as one long kind of topic on, you know, again, I think after these calls, we always think about like, what's going to be the title of this one. And yeah, I mean, I think it's better a little bit kind of talking about, you know, early traction, fielding questions when you have sort of a, I don't dare say product market fit, but that's a big thing to mention. We won't go there, but you have intrigue and interest and actually are getting feedback and good questions. Like, you're there's something to the little, you know, we talked about a net. There's something attractive enough in your net that is getting fish to kind of come through, and you're getting different sized fish, different fish without necessarily going out and spear hunting, if that makes sense.
So. Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, thanks, Josh. We'll talk to you later.
Awesome. All right. Talk to you later. Thanks, Nate. Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.